We're sponsored by Overcast, an independent podcasting app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
No exclusives, no premium content, no paywalls. Just a great podcast app for everyone.
Get it for free in the App Store. Ding dong.
Ding dong, the witch is dead. Witch old witch.
Oh, the wicked witch.
Yeah.
And also, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
It is happy holidays. It's currently November 10th, and we're celebrating Christmas with Desperate Housewives right now, because this episode was a very Christmassy vibe.
Kind of, but also not really.
Yeah, it like started with Christmas and then said, never mind.
It's the area is Christmas, but you know, yes. We're not going to really pay attention to it.
Oh, yes. So I should say welcome to Wisteria Gaze. This is a podcast.
Sorry.
I should have waited. This is a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Desperate Housewives. As you're well aware, I'm assuming, we're in season 3. We're episode 10.
My name is Ned.
My name is Mackenzie.
Your name is your name.
And your name? Tell us your name right now. We hear it from afar.
Beautiful.
It's a beautiful name. You want to get into this?
I just want to get into it, Mackenzie. I just want to get into it right now.
Okay. This episode premiered on November 26th, 2006. We're kind of close to like when the air dates were happening.
Yeah.
It's November 10th on our end.
I was going to say we should do a new bit where we just re-release on the days that they came out. Like, this episode came out November 10th, so we're releasing this episode. Never mind. You keep going.
No, that's pretty tasty. And also, that reminds me, we should actually say we're going to be shifting our release date a bit. Probably starting next week, I believe. We're going to be releasing on Friday instead because, oh man. We clearly, as y'all have noticed the last couple of times, getting us out on Wednesday has tended to be a bit of a struggle. So we're going to push it back a little bit, do more of a weekend vibe, you know, start your weekend with some Wisteria Gaze.
T-G-I-W-G-F. Thank God it's Wisteria Gaze Friday.
Okay. I love that. That was a perfect segue. Thank you for bringing that up, because I was like, we should tell people we're going to shift the release day.
Yeah.
But this episode was also written by Bob Daly and directed by Larry Shaw. For hashtag Sondheim Watch, The Miracle Song is the name of this episode, and it's from the musical Anyone Can Whistle. And for Wisteria International in France, this was called Time of Miracles. In Italy and Poland, it was called Christmas at Wisteria Lane. And in Germany, it was rightfully called Escalation. Because, man, does this episode escalate a lot of things. My emotions, one, and the story, two.
Hell yeah. I loved this. This was a pretty good one.
The
pretty juicy.
The pacing was really good. I hated, you know, I hate the things I hate, and we'll get into it. But I loved this episode in terms of like the writing and the pacing was super fun. Do you want to fucking dive in?
I'm already in.
You're in? Oh my God.
I'm so mad today.
Oh my God.
Everything, my whole day's been running behind. So now I have to run forward. I have to run ahead.
Oh my God. Get in there.
Okay. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
We open on Christmas, the annual winter block party. And, you know, everybody on the lane loves the party, the annual block party. Did I say that it was an annual block party?
It's an annual block
Christmas?
Party. Yeah. Which seemed to be happening very early, because it was happening, I want to know, before people were even putting their decorations out.
Yeah, that's, I don't know. Like, maybe it was just like the way to jumpstart the holiday season. It's literally 12:01 after Thanksgiving.
The way this thing looked, it looked like literally like it was happening on Christmas Day. Like the decor was so intense. And then we find out after the credits that people hadn't even decorated for Christmas yet. Whatever. No. Very weird.
But so everybody on the lane is invited to the block party every year. And as the big night grew near, holiday cheer wasn't the only thing being spread around. Kluski was spreading around the news.
She's spreading
and information
the tea.
About art.
About art. And by Sunday evening, probably we can assume everyone's heard, because the block party is hopping and happening. And honestly, it looked very cute. I would have actually loved to have attended. And then things shift a bit when Art and his sister arrive. And he is dressed as Santa Claus, and everyone immediately is horrified, and I personally am shitting my pants.
I hate this man.
I also hate this man.
I'm so confused. I guess not really confused, but I just don't know why they decided to take his storyline in this direction.
Yeah.
That we'll talk more about like when we actually get to it.
Yeah.
But like I think it was like a really strange direction to go to. I feel like this could have been a 2-episode thing and it could have been done with. I think it just went on for too long.
Yeah, it's really weird. I have a lot of thoughts and feelings about this, and I should say, as I've said the last couple episodes, I'll be wrapping up now, but content warning for discussion of pedophilia and things like that throughout this episode with Art. I mean, that's a trigger for me. I hate storylines like this. I fucking hate this man. He can choke, as far as I'm concerned. I think that throughout the episode, it tries to give us this gray morality situation of like, do you really know? And I think that's bullshit. I think it's annoying. I think, we'll get into it later, especially the scene with the sister later was so wild to me. In this moment, I obviously hate this guy, but I kind of felt bad for his sister in this part, only because she clearly did not know what was going on, and I felt bad that she like showed up assuming they'd be welcomed, and then like because her brother's a fucking piece of shit, like this happened. And I should explain for the audience what happens is that everyone shuns them. Basically, they don't speak to them. They stare at them. Art knows what's up, and they get kind of shamed into leaving the party.
And then we get our opening credits.
Yes.
When we come back, we are told that for the residents of Wisteria Lane, the holidays begin once the decorations come out.
And I guess that's when there's no Jews on Wisteria Lane, confirmed. Because I was like, where's the Hanukkah? Come on. I celebrate Chrismukkah, you know? We're here. Yeah. We're out here.
I mean, with the way these women are, they're all Christian. None of them.
Like, Hanukkah is so early this year. It's literally November 28th. So, like, based on when this airs, Hanukkah would have been 2 days after this aired if it was this year.
But yeah, we get a couple like small vignettes. We see everybody taking out their Christmas stuff. We see Susan and Ian kissing under a mistletoe. And we open on that scene. He tells Susan that his parents are coming to town and he wants her to cook them a dinner.
Which, how have they made it this far in their relationship and he doesn't know she can't cook?
I'm so happy, though, that this is like Susan's thing. Like, this is not something they forgot about. Children's illustrator. I thought that was very funny. And how she's like,
yeah,
I cannot do that for you. No matter how badly you need me to, I cannot give you this.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it. I was reminiscing to when Mike ate her mac and cheese. And I'm like, I also was like, why won't they just do they kind of do later, but the old standby sitcom trope of, she just orders out takeout and pretends like she cooked it.
She says that, like, okay, I'll try to cook for them. And he was like, yeah, just a simple roast and just have something to go with it. And she's like, oh, God. But then we cut to pageantry.
Pageantry. We're seeing Vern and Gabby, my new favorite dynamic duo, helping the kids. And they seem to have completely shifted what the storyline was, because I thought last time it was a class people paid for and enrolled in. And now it seems like they're managers.
Yeah.
So, like, they've completely dropped. They've just completely dropped. I don't know. I just feel like that this whole thing has shifted kind of a bit. And yes, they want to drop Amy because they think she's not good enough to compete, which, like, I didn't think was their job in the first place. So this got a little confusing for me, but whatever.
Yeah, because it was very much like they were just, like, coaching these girls for pageants. And this episode, exactly like you just said, is just, like, we have enrolled all of these girls into a pageant.
Yeah. And
but it's like, why wouldn't you coach all of your girls then?
I don't know, dude. It's really confusing. But we do see that they think that Amy sucks, but there's a new girl named Sherry who is amazing. And then they've added for this episode. And Ned, I feel like you should take this actor introduction.
I need to take this actor introduction. I know I've been doing it a lot lately. But there's just been so many good ones. Can I ask you one question?
Yes.
Is she only in this episode?
I don't remember, if I'm being honest.
So who I am talking about, everybody, is the lovely Sherry, real name Chloe Grace Moretz. I screamed.
Did you?
When I saw this little child. So here's the thing. Chloe Grace Moretz is the same age as like us.
Yeah.
We're like
I think
the same
so.
Age.
Yeah.
Yeah. So she's the same age as us. So like when you can watch this episode and go, little Ned was that big when this episode of Desperate Housewives
yeah,
came out.
Oh my God.
But my Chloe Grace Moretz story is that in eighth grade, my sister took me to my first ever R movie in theaters, and it was the movie Kick-Ass. And I do not believe that movie holds up. My tastes have changed largely since then, but I became obsessed with that movie, and I developed the biggest crush on her because I was like, she's my age. She's doing cool flips and killing people in this movie. She's being cool. And I love Chloe Grace Moretz, and so it was fucking wild to see her as a little tiny baby just a couple years before Kick-Ass. That's so fucking weird. Everybody's yeah. connected. I used to tweet, like, when I was in eighth grade, I, like, had a Twitter, and I tweeted being like, Chloe Grace Moretz, I love your work. Please say hello to me.
And did like, she say hello?
She said hi. And I freaked out.
Did you screen grab it?
I mean, I didn't because it was on my parents' computer.
Damn.
I was young. I was like 12, so.
Oh my God.
Anyway, Sherry is Chloe Grace Moretz. She is giving us pageantry.
We love to see it. She's also, I feel like in recent years, more known for like, she did Miseducation of Cameron Post.
Yes.
Right? She did Dark Shadows a couple years ago. She's fun. I loved Dark Shadows, you know?
Yeah, she's been doing pretty well still.
Yeah. And then we cut to Mommy Hodge getting some brekkie from Brie. And she's watching home movies to, quote, kill time as she waits for death, which is a mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, why is Mommy Hodge staying with Brie still when Brie is kicking her son out? Whatever. She asks Brie if she's going to divorce Orson, and Brie is like, I love him. It's hard. And that's kind of this whole scene. It's like them just kind of facing off. And then this fucking home movie they show at the end is so comically weird. It seems like they filmed it like the day it had to be put on. Like there was like they did one take and they were like, yeah, 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 yeah. Just don't they look kind of disgruntled at them. Yeah, yeah. And then they didn't do another take. So that was kind of that whole scene.
Yeah. And then we cut to Lynette in her car. She is on the phone with a person named Rita. They are planning a mommy meeting to decide what to do about art. And it's going to be Saturday afternoon. Then there's a little bang, bang, bang on the side
bang,
of the
bang,
door.
Bang.
Bang, bang, bang on the trolley. and it is Art's sister. And she goes up to Lynette being like, what the fuck is wrong with you? My brother was just fired from his job and people are throwing shit at us and spitting on us. And Lynette's like, well, I have children, so.
This is what pissed me off. I kind of alluded to it earlier. Them trying to make this a more morally gray situation of like, Lynette, what if you were wrong?
Mm-hmm.
What if you were wrong? And the thing that made me want to fly off the fucking handle was when she's like, those boys were on his swim team. He was proud of them. You shouldn't have made it into something dirty. I literally wrote in all caps, I am sorry, but having a photo of like you and your team as one makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
having individual shirtless Polaroids in your basement. Also, there was like 100 of them.
Yeah.
How many people on his fucking team? That's not normal. No. Having a, if you're proud of your team, you have a little team photo framed in your living room. If you are a fucking pedophile, you have shirtless photos in your basement of like 100 kids. Like, this, it was just, that was what pissed me off. I'm like, that's not gray. What we saw with our fucking eyes is not gray. And I hate that this show is trying to make it morally gray when fucking pedophilia should not be morally gray. That's this episode has induced so much anger in me. So I apologize. Can you tell I hate this storyline? I don't know if you can tell or not from these last three episodes we've been dealing with it during.
Jesus Christ. Yeah, but I mean, not to give too much of a spoiler, but I'm glad it's finally fucking over after this.
Oh, yeah, same.
We then get Susan and Bree. Susan wants Bree to do all the cooking for her. Classic. But Bree agrees. She said she can use the distraction because she asked Orson to move out.
And then we cut away while the tea is spilled.
Yes, we cut away to Carlos, Edie, and Mike, the new Three's Company.
The new Three's Company.
There's a knock on their door.
Ba-da-da-da-da-da. It's the fucking cops.
Mike.
Yes.
Just as we see the cops outside the door.
I wish it was multiple mics.
Yeah, me too. We cut back to Susan and Bree, and they're setting this up perfectly because Susan says, well, you know, you can't put your feelings for him above what he actually did.
Yes.
And then they go outside conveniently to see Mike getting arrested.
This setup was so good. That was one of my favorite moments of the episode, this sort of setup with the two of them.
Yeah. And then we find out that they're arresting him for killing Monique.
Yeah, which is wild, but I mean, like, I guess the evidence they have is that her blood was found on the ranch, right? Mm. That's the thing they got him on.
Why didn't he just clean it? Like, Klusky told you to clean it, Mike. If anything, Klusky killed this woman.
Yeah, I don't know why he made the worst decision. We didn't, like, linger on it, but in that other scene, Edie was literally like, why the fuck did you just bury that? I agree with Edie. The cops were actively following him.
He was like, when I got hit on my little head, I became a himbo, and I forgot that they were following me.
We then cut to Vern and Gabby, and they're going to tell Amy's widowed father that they're dropping her because I guess they're a management team now. And they walk up to this tall drink of water, and they turn around. He turns around, and it is the, oh no, he's hot meme.
In my notes, I wrote, oh, her dad is average, which means he's Gabby hot.
I thought he was handsome. Vernon sits down. His name's Bill, which is funny to me. Vern sits down to explain, and Gabby is too wet and wild to pick up on the fact that they're supposed to be dropping his daughter, so instead she tries to pick him up. That was a great little and yeah, that, I mean, that's, I mean, honestly, like, it's kind of gross because she's lying to him, but also, like, I want Gabby to have a boyfriend that's like a cute, nice dad. Why not?
Yeah, let her, that's kind of fun.
That would be fun. Date Bill.
Yeah, Gabby and Bill.
Gabby and
Babby.
Bill.
Baby.
Gil.
It's just baby.
Baby. Whenever I say baby, I think specifically of how Amber Von Tussle says it in the 2007 film Hairspray.
Oh, she goes, yeah.
Baby. And so that's that.
But after that, we cut to a very funny scene. We cut to Mike in jail. He's talking to Edie about how they're going to need a really good lawyer. He'll pay her back, of course, but like he has a couple leads. And Edie just, like, breaks up with him. She's like, listen, this totally isn't because you're in jail or anything like that and because you might have killed a person. But I'm not happy. And
I haven't been for weeks.
And it's, like, not because of the wrench. So I think we need to take a break. And can I just say, it looks like James Denton was trying so hard to not laugh during this. Like, every time it cut back to him, he was smiling so much.
She was so funny. I also was like, girl, you went to so much fucking trouble to make this man fall in love with you, and then you're gonna drop him immediately.
Yeah, and I will talk about this. I will talk about this literally in the next scene that happens. There is a difference, okay?
Between Susan and Edie.
You know, she has doubts. Brie has doubts. You know who has no doubts for her man?
Susan, baby.
Susan has so many doubts about every other man except for Mike.
Edie is not about to ruin her life for this man, but Susan will.
Yeah.
Okay. Susan will ruin her life.
Doesn't have anything to lose.
Yeah, exactly. She doesn't have a job or anything. And speaking of Susan, we cut immediately to Susan arriving to say hello. And she just, for some fucking reason, wanted to show up and be like, even though she hasn't talked to him in like 4 weeks, be like, how's Edie helping you? And he's like, well, she broke up with me.
It was so strange, though, because when she comes in, he's like, well, they told me somebody was coming, but I didn't think it'd be you. And so it's like, what? Who did you think was what?
Maybe Carlos? I don't know. Because and
Carlos
Susan brings
is his
it up,
BFF.
It's his BFF. He brings it up later, or Susan brings it up later, how like he still hasn't recovered from his amnesia.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't really remember his relationship with Susan still. So, yeah, I guess it would make sense that like she wouldn't be top of his mind of who would be arriving, just because he doesn't even remember the relationship they had.
But this scene, their chemistry, I missed their it. Chemistry. It was off the fucking charts.
Oh my God.
I've left my body.
I'm gonna nut. I'm so excited for their Christmas movie that's coming out.
I want to watch it so bad with you.
You know we're gonna watch it. We're gonna watch it. Everybody, if you have not heard the good news, even though I mentioned it last week, Terry Hatcher and James Denton are going to be in a movie together, and it's going to be fucking great.
Not just any movie. A Hallmark
Christmas movie. I'm so fucking excited. I'm like vibrating. I'm so excited to watch their fucking chemistry.
Fuck yeah.
They both look great.
Oh, I'll say it. Oh, yeah.
I posted a little, if you go to our Instagram, I posted a little like promo of them the other day. They look great.
They look fantastic.
Also, his bail is $1 million.
His bail's $1 million.
That's wild. And she says she wants to help him. He's like, are you gonna ask if I'm guilty? And she goes, I don't have to. I know you're not. And it's she's so in love with him, and I'm so in love with them together.
Yeah.
I need my Muzin back.
I need it back. But instead, we're given Amy throwing her baton in the air. Gabby is with Bill. We find out he's a single dad. Thank God.
Well, he widowed. He's widowed. His wife died.
Thank God. We cut back to Amy. She gets bonked on her head. Did you see that?
I did. I see. But Bill's like cutting up some mushrooms. He's like, join us for dinner. You're not going to eat alone again. But Gabby is clearly laying it on thick that she's divorced and single and ready to fuck.
And yeah, I think he's down.
He's very down. But guess who's not down?
Amy.
Little Amy. Because she comes in. She's sad because no one is watching her actually practice. And she kind of catches, near the end of the scene, Gabby and her dad interlacing fingers in like the creepiest way.
We got to recreate that.
Oh, we do. But it is going to come back later a little bit more about how Amy feels about Gabby and Bill's relationship. But for now, we got to go back to Susie Q.
Susie Q. She's looking at attorneys. Ian comes home with a bowl of flowers. And he's pretty pissed. He finds out that she is looking for attorneys for Mike, and he is pretty sure that, like, listen, if you start doing this for him, you're going to fall for him again, and then you're just going to break my heart again.
Yeah, I mean, basically, like, he has a sad British eyes, and he's, like, jealous, and I'm like, look, suck my souffle, Ian, okay? Muzin's endgame. Get out of my butt.
Get out of my freaking butt. Muzin's endgame until I can't say it.
Until we cut to Brie. Okay, this is my favorite scene of the whole episode.
Yes, mine too. It's poker.
It's poker night or poker afternoon, I guess. Because they sit down. This fucking scene, there was like too much happening in it almost for me to write down everything that happened because it was so fucking quick. But the pacing was so funny. The bits between like the two pairs of women, like Lynette and Gabby having their own bit while Brie and Susan talked. This was my favorite scene. It was so fucking good. And hell Lynette yeah. asks what we've all been thinking. Why has it been so long since they've done that?
Yes.
Can I say, I'm forgetting to nominate Lotes.
So
I keep
forgetting. Here's the thing. What? I don't think it's your fault. I don't think it's my fault.
There's not been a lot of Lotes.
I think it's the writers of Desperate Housewives' fault.
We're going to blame them from 2006. But can I say, I did want to nominate the phrase finger food and girl talk for Lote.
I also did because I wrote down fingering and food talk.
So I just wanted to finger talk and girl food.
Yes.
I just wanted to nominate the phrase finger food and girl talk for lesbian of the episode. And I think that was my only nominee.
Honestly.
Let's name it. Just the words.
The phrase. Everybody listening to this, have some finger food and girl talk time.
What if we make a finger food and girl talk shirt? Would people buy it?
Yes. What if we renamed one of our Discord channels to
finger food and girl talk? Yes. Oh my gosh, please. Basically, this scene is they sit down to try to do poker, but Susan and Brie have a bit of a face-off because Susan doesn't understand why Brie isn't going to take her doubts about Orson to the police. But Brie relents that, well, Mike got arrested for it, so now Orson's all okay. And they kind of just, it's basically them fighting over this while Lynette and Gabby are sort of just like making funny jokes. And Gabby's saying, yeah, let's talk. Anybody have a yeast infection?
Yeah.
It's the funniest fucking thing. I had to fucking pause because I was laughing so hard. I was laughing so hard at the way she delivered, anybody have a yeast infection? Oh, Lynette and Gabby were so fucking funny in this scene.
They really were.
Oh, my God.
I loved the, we're not playing cards. Nope.
There was just like those little things. It was so fucking funny. The scene was electric. Oh my God.
Yeah. I was talking about the other day. I was watching Glee, and something that is really fun and easy to do in TV shows that I really like are just like one-off lines that don't have to make any sense because you will never hear about them again. And Glee does a really good job when they come back, at least in the first few seasons, of just saying things that happened over the summer that we never see. But it's just like, yeah, you were dating a 40-year-old skateboarder during the summer, and I was really worried about you for a hot minute.
I love that.
But I think like this like the yeast infection, the one-off quips that Lynette and Gabby had in this scene, I thought it was very well done.
Do you know who we see come in after Susan leaves?
Yes, Susan does leave also. I don't know if we said that.
Oh, yeah. Susan storms out. Bree's like, I'm not cooking for you. But Susan leaves, but I think the unmistakable fedora of Detective Suze returns back into Bree's house and steals the key.
She doesn't leave. She pretends to leave. She slams the door.
And she puts her fedora on, is what I was saying. I was like, she's a new woman to me.
Yeah.
And she steals the key to Orson's office, I suppose, his dentist office. So we see Detective Suze steal that key. And then we cut to, I guess, later. Timelines are confusing. To Lynette going to Rita's house. And it's a little wild. They're making some anti-pedophile signs, which I stand by. But they're going pretty intense right now.
Yeah, they're planning a protest outside his house.
What is that going to do? And then shame him?
Then the kind of infuriating plotline comes back up where Lynette tries to say, well, we don't have proof. So how do we actually know? And the women are like, well, he got fired. That's proof enough. And Lynette's like, well, he was only fired because we were talking about him.
Yeah, why is Lynette changing her tune? I mean, I guess because Rebecca's guilting her, but yeah, it's weird.
I think it's just like a combination of like, she feels like I think so many people have been telling her that she is wrong, that she is second guessing herself. Mm-hmm. Because, like, why would all these people be coming up to me and telling me I'm wrong if he wasn't just a nice guy?
Yeah.
So she's second-guessing herself, which in turn is just, like, it's just making her feel guilty. Because she feels like she's ruining an innocent guy's life when he's not innocent.
No, like, and we see in the end, and that's another scene we're going to get into, where I've seen a lot of talk online about people saying it's ambiguous. I don't find any ambiguity with the way he speaks to
her.
The
way
he
speaks, I'm sorry.
He's like a fucking cartoon villain, the way he speaks to her.
I was going
to
say, I will repeat this when we get to it, but not only just his mannerisms, the way he speaks, but the music behind him.
The music and him saying, like, I'm free. Fuck
like,
off.
There,
yeah, we're going to get into it. Oh, my God.
Like, the dialogue is explicitly telling you this. And even...
It's not ambiguous.
It is not ambiguous because, like, everything about that scene is telling you that he is a bad guy. Like, the music is telling you, if you couldn't pick it up from the dialogue. The lighting and everything on him is telling you that he is
his
bad.
His delivery. Like, he was directed to deliver those lines that way.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, even if you could not pick up from his delivery, you know, that, like, he is a malicious man.
Yeah.
You could tell by every other cue in that scene. So the fact that there even is an argument that this is ambiguous.
It's maddening to me. It's maddening.
Yeah, I am sorry, but I don't agree with that.
See, and this is why we're friends, because I can yell about it with you. For now, we have to, but we're going to get, I'm sure we'll talk about it a bit later. But for now, we got to cut back. Detective Suze, she's here again. She's breaking into the office to peep some evidence from Orson, and she does not realize until it's too late that he's there. So she runs to hide and tries not to get caught. And Ned, did you see what he was drinking?
Was he drinking Dr. Porger?
He was drinking a Lime Diet Coke.
Sponsor.
I was literally did they get a fucking sponsorship? Like, did they literally get a sponsorship? That's wild. But that's kind of all that scene right now, because we cut away.
Yes, we do. Yes, so we go to Gabby and Amy and Bill. And Bill asks Gabby to go out for coffee after practice.
Yes.
And Gabby agrees. And Amy goes, you're not going to be with my dad. I don't like you. I want what's best for him, and what's best for him is what makes, or no, she's like, I don't care about what's best for him, he just wants to make me happy, and what's gonna make me happy is when he marries Sherry's mom, because we're BFFs and we're gonna be fucking sisters. Which, isn't that the most little kid shit? Like
yes. I feel like I also had best friends where I was like, man, if our parents could just get married, then we would just be related and it'd be great.
Yeah.
I've absolutely had, that is the most little kid shit of all time. And I love it. I love it.
And that's that scene.
Yeah. And then we cut to Orson crushing like a whole fucking pizza. Relatable king. He goes to brush his teethies and Susan is like, cool, I can make a break for it. Because I think I mentioned she was hiding, but she's hiding in a closet in his office just trying to find a way to get out. She's going to try to get out, but lo and behold, Miss Vandekamp, Miss Hodge, I should say, opens the door, comes in, and it's so funny because she's like, why were you avoiding my calls? And he's like, I thought you were going to ask for a divorce. As if he doesn't hear it, it's not going to happen. Like, if she wanted a divorce, she could file without talking to you, dude.
Yeah.
I just think it's funny that he was just like, yeah, it's like the T-Rex thing where it's like, if you don't move, they can't see you. He's like, if I don't move, she can't divorce me.
Can I pitch something to you real quick?
Pitch it, please. Pitch it.
Lote nominee. Susan in the closet.
Wait, that's so good. Do we already give it?
We can, listen, this is our show.
This is our show.
We can do whatever we want.
The thing is, Susan in the closet is funny because it's a play on words. You know, it's being in the closet. I actually kind of want to shift it to that, and then we'll just do finger foods and lady talk or whatever.
That'll be
as merchandise.
That'll be the description for this episode. In this episode, we discuss finger foods and girl talk.
Yes, but maybe I think Lote should be Susan in the closet because that's so fucking funny.
Yeah, let's do it.
I love that. And Susan's still in the closet, gay as ever. Brie is like, hey, Mike got arrested and I want all the fucking tea from you. And he's like, okay, let's do it. There's a lot in this episode of people being like, we're going to talk about the plot. And then we cut away from them. So that happens again in this scene.
And we go to Gabby. She starts interacting with Sherry, being like, Sherry, you're doing so good. I just want to let you know that, like,
she's
the opening.
So tiny.
She's so tiny.
You're working so hard, Sherry. You must really want to win this pageant.
More than anything.
Oh. Well, I think dedication should be rewarded. So I have a little surprise for you.
What is it?
Well, you know how the pageant starts with a big opening number? This year, all the contestants are going to dance in pairs, and I've arranged for you to dance with your best friend, Amy. What's wrong, sweetie?
Well, Amy sucks.
Well, I thought you two were practically sisters.
We are. But she still sucks. And first impressions are everything. You said so yourself.
Well, that's true.
And this is the opening number. If the judges see me tripping all over that cloth, there's no way I'm gonna win.
And Sherry is not happy because Amy sucks, dude. And she's never gonna win with Amy.
Yeah, and Gabby is so desperate for some fucking man that she is going to sabotage children's friendships so that she can get laid.
Ah, there's the Gabby we know.
There's the Gabby we know. Also, why did all of Sherry's lines look 80 yard? Like, she looked weird talking to me.
That's just how Chloe Grace Moretz talks.
She knows how to ADR her voice in real life.
Yeah, she's a ventriloquist.
And then we cut to Orson is letting Brie in on everything that's happened. So he says that Gloria, a.k.a. Mommy, wanted him and Alma to get married. And if you remember, we met Alma like a million years ago, beginning of the season. And we saw her again in the home movie to this episode. And I think the only reason why we were shown her face again is for things that happened later. And he mentions that he didn't want to marry Alma, but Mommy made him, which, wild. And he got her pregnant and she ended up having a miscarriage, and he felt trapped in this marriage he'd never wanted. And Mommy Hodge would not let him get a divorce. And he was just going to live his life loveless until he met Monique and he fell in love with her, and he didn't care if it was wrong. And Brie asks why he never mentioned it. And he said that he didn't want to tell her because he knows about Rex and how bad Rex's cheating hurt her. And he didn't want Brie to think that he was going to cheat on her, which I guess makes sense. You still should tell people things when it's like this. But yeah, but we cut to Susan in the closet. Do you want to get into this?
I do. She takes a box from like the top part of his shelf and she starts going through it, and there's like a paper for like a boys' school, like a boarding school, and she then finds records from his stay in a mental hospital
psychological depression.
Yes, that's what it was. And then there is a picture of Orson, a very photoshopped picture of a young Orson with a young Gloria, like, standing behind him.
He mentions it. Actually, I forgot to say it. And when he was kind of expelling all of this plot, he mentioned that his dad died. Have we learned that before? Or was that new news from Orson?
No, I think that's new. Also,
yeah. So he. Sorry. What's up?
I just have a few questions in general. Like, who is so? Like the. I'm assuming where he stayed was where Brie was.
But it looked like it was young. He was young.
Yeah,
that might have been why he had a friend there.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think that's why he had a friend there. Because when we met Orson,
he was visiting a friend.
I haven't forgotten about that.
You haven't. Hopefully they haven't either.
Me too.
The people who write this TV show.
I hope they haven't.
But yeah, like, so I didn't even, it happened so quickly, I don't think I realized it was new news, but that, yeah, we learned that Orson's dad died,
mm-hmm.
and that his mom was all he had, and the photo we see, he looks pretty young, those files look pretty old. Like, in my brain, I immediately went to, and maybe Susan wasn't listening, right, at this point, but, like, he might have fallen into a depression when his dad died.
Yeah.
And he was left with an abusive mother. Like, I think she is leaping to conclusions.
Well,
and she is just being really gross to him because he was at a hospital. And it's like, people sometimes have to go there to get better for very things that you would consider normal, like losing your dad. You know what I mean? Like,
just like this very specific kind of woman, I feel like my mom was similar as well. And like, not to get too into it, but my mom is like these women are one of the people who are like, oh, if you have to see a therapist, oh, if you have to go to like a hospital for a bit, if you have to take medication, there is something so wrong with you. You know, like, it's not abnormal. Like, this like nothing about this is wrong. Nothing about this like is abnormal.
Having to go somewhere to get help to function in this world is never wrong. And yeah, like it was just like, the thing is, I am not even moderately nervous about the fact that he went to a place to get help for depression. I'm more so like, how come he hasn't accounted for where he was around the time Monique got murdered?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's more what we need to focus on, not what he did as a teenager. More so like, where were you when this woman was killed? You know what I mean? Like, that seems to be what people are not. So I just am annoyed with however Susan's going to plan to fucking use this. But Susan is able to get out eventually. Did we ever see? I don't even know. I was making a joke.
No, we didn't see her like get out. It just kind of cut.
We just see her come home.
Yeah.
Because she comes.
You go.
Because she comes home and sees that Ian is there alone. His parents never made it because their plane was snowed in at O'Hare.
It's just canon at this point. I don't know.
It's Chicago.
Yeah.
It's Chicago.
We're just in Illinois.
They're in Chicago suburbs. Yes. I'm like, that's enough for me. What other O'Hare exists? Whatever. Ian's pissed because she's 40 minutes late. She has no dinner. And he is being so fucking jealous because he's like, you didn't know they were not going to be here. So why are you late in the first place? And he knows that she was looking for something for Mike. And she tries to kind of show her detective hand and show the evidence she found. But he doesn't give a shit. He's like, tonight meant a lot to me. And you blew it off for him.
And you know what he's going to do about it?
Be fucking wild. That's what he's going to do about it.
Yeah, he's going to pay for the best lawyer in town, and he's going to pay for all of the expenses to get Mike out of jail. But after that, she can't see him anymore. She can't talk to him. She can't be friends with him. That relationship is done.
This is some bullshit, bonkers, bananas piss right here.
That is just like, dude, if you know,
if you were that fucking cure about Mikey Poo, maybe you shouldn't be in this relationship.
Yeah, maybe you should go back to your wife.
Go back to your other life. Go back to your mansion with your boyfriend Rupert, okay?
Give him a little kiss under the mistletoe, okay?
Give him a little kiss under the mistletoe. Like,
Rupert Ian fan fiction.
Okay, I'll make it. I'll find it. I'll do
okay,
it.
Okay, because I need to block it.
and then we cut to Lynette seeing the protest outside of Art's house. Tom comes out and pulls an I told you so and tells her that he's going to put the kids to bed at fucking 2 p.m., I guess.
Because
it's like the middle of the fucking day. And then they overhear an ambulance arriving.
Yes, but then we quickly cut to a very short scene of Sherry and Amy breaking up, which means Gabby gets her guy. And then we go back to the protest. They are wheeling. What's the sister's name again?
I think Rebecca. I found out at the end. Like, Lynette mentions Rebecca. I think we might have found out earlier, but I didn't hear it until the end of the episode. She's in cardiac arrest.
Yes, she's in cardiac arrest. She gets put in the ambulance, and Art comes out, and everybody starts going, "There he is!" And they start throwing shit at him.
Stones him. Yeah. Back the head.
And then he has a look at Lynette, and Lynette's like, "I'm so sorry."
Lynette's like trying to plead to the crowd to leave him alone, and it's like, girl, you started this fucking train.
You really did. And then we cut to Bree and Orson. They're packing up Mother Hodges' things, and she's not too happy about it because they're gonna just like get rid of her, put her in a nursing home somewhere or a retirement community. And when Bree leaves the room, Mother Hodges is like, "You have so." Oh, sorry. Did you?
No, I just want to say, do you know what I realized in this scene?
What?
This was the first time I realized, because someone, I think at the beginning of the season, sent us that Marcia Cross was pregnant during this season, and they told us to keep an eye out for when they start covering her belly, and then I realized this episode had a lot of belly covering because of her standing in front of this huge fucking box, and then it made me think about how every shot of her is from, like, her shoulders and
up. That's so funny. I forgot about that. I gotta look out for that.
Yeah, I only noticed it in this scene when I noticed how ginormous the box she was carrying was. I was like, that's so funny. So we're on Marcia Cross pregnancy watch now.
I love it. But Bree takes that giant box out of the room, and Mother Hodge says, "Orson, I have more of your secrets. You didn't tell her anything of use." And Orson's like, "Mom, you have fucking secrets too. So how about you suck my elbow?" Oh, she has a phone.
She flips that little flip phone open. Beep, boop, beep, boop, beep, boop. She calls someone who we do not hear.
Her plug.
Yet. Her what?
Her plug.
And she says, they're getting back together. We've got to meet right now. Meet me at the corner. Or whatever. Like, just fucking weird. Well, we see who it is later. And I am exhilarated to talk about it. But first, we have to go to my personal hell, which is this scene.
The next scene. I'll talk about it. I'll talk about it for you. So, the next scene. Lynette and Art. Rebecca has passed away. It was on the news. And Art says, "You feel sorry, don't you?" And Lynette starts weeping, and she's like, "I feel so bad. I did not mean for stuff to spiral this way. You don't deserve that." Mm-hmm. And he retorts with,
"You know, in a weird way, I should thank you. My sister was a really wonderful person. She always saw the best in me. But there are things she couldn't see. Or chose not to. God love her."
What do you mean?
I think you know. See, I always knew that I had to take care of Rebecca, so I could never let myself slip and do something that would hurt her. But now, I'm free. And all because of you.
You can't stay here.
Well, don't worry, I'm already packed.
Where are you going?
Why, are you gonna write? Well, goodbye, Lynette. You take care of that beautiful family of yours.
He, like, literally says, "I should thank you."
Yeah.
"For killing my sister." Basically, inadvertently. And I'm like, what the fuck? How is this ambiguous to anybody? He's just like horrifying. And you're right. We talked about it earlier, so we don't have to rehash it. But the music, the delivery, the lines, everything about this reads to me that he is a pedophile who maybe held himself back from physical abuse of people because he felt these obligations to his sister. But now it's weird. There's this implication that, like, because Lynette did this, she is now setting loose a worse monster into the world. Mm-hmm. And I fucking hate that. I hate that this lands on Lynette's shoulders of, like, he's a pedophile who can now do what he wants, and somehow it's Lynette's fault.
Yeah.
That he's a pedophile. I don't know. It's just, I think this was messily done. I also, as I've said, you know, it's a trigger for me. I hate stories about pedophilia in TV shows and movies. I just think this was messily done, and I fucking hate this. This sucks that Lynette. Yeah.
She didn't have a lot of other trauma happening. So.
Oh yeah, no, she wasn't like shot or anything like 2 fucking weeks ago.
Yeah, like she doesn't have to live with a kid whose mother just died in front of her or anything.
Can I say though? Mm. I was like hating the scene, and then the fucking shot of the. The Santa and the little angels was funny. It was so stupid.
It was supposed to be like ominous, but it was like, what the fuck is that? Why is that your Christmas decorations and you're trying not to look like a creep?
And it's like, but it's just like her looking at it and thinking of the implications and like having a breakdown over these Christmas decorations was like funny to me. Like it was very funny. Like,
I'll make an edit and put Lynette. Some fun music in it.
So, you know, all in all, I hope art fucking chokes.
And then we get our closing monologue.
I should say, we see Mommy leaving the house.
Mommy.
There's a reason people can't wait for Christmas. And it has little to do with family reunions or curling up with a cup of eggnog.
Edie looks hot, drinking some eggnog.
Or that unexpected kiss beneath the mistletoe.
Ian and Susan kiss.
Or receiving a present from that special someone.
Bill and Gabby.
No. People look forward to Christmas because they know it's a time for miracles.
Hello, Alba. Don't just stand there. Tell me everything.
The ghost of Christmas past, baby, because Mommy walks down the street, tippy tip tap on a window, and we see Alma Hodge in the car.
Can I say something?
Tell me.
And this still might not be true, but twins. I'm waiting for twins. Oh. I'm waiting for twins.
We'll have to see. Do you have any predictions based on this big bomb drop?
She either faked her own death and blamed Orson, like I said previously, or her twin died and nobody knew she had a twin.
Well, I'm excited to dive in. That was a fucking huge bomb drop. I howled. I'm very excited.
It was awesome. I'm so fucking pumped.
With that, we have been Wisteria Gaze. If you want to find us on social media, you can find us on Twitter or Instagram at Wisteria Gaze or on Twitter or at Wisteria Gaze _ on Instagram. We also have a website, WisteriaGaze.com.
And on that website, you can find links to our merch page, our Discord. Our Discord is great. We talk to so many people and we hang out.
We vibe.
And you can also find a link to our Patreon. Our Patreon is great. It helps support us. It helps support our show. We love you so much if you subscribe. And also, it's pay what you can. Minimum $2.
Pay what you can, baby.
And you get
some fun stuff coming. We got some fun shit.
Fuck yeah. And you get some fun stuff right off the bat, like ad-free episodes, episode show notes, and shout-outs. So we're going to take the next second to shout-out our patrons. So thank you, AJ.
Amanda.
Annie.
Cheryl.
Elise.
Helena.
Liv.
Lydia.
Nadia.
Sarah.
And Tom.
You're so juicy. I love you so much.
I love you. I'm a creep. What? Oh, I love reviews. I love reviews so freaking heckin' crappin' much. I'm screaming. I'm pissing. I'm shitting. I'm farting. And, they help people find our show. They make our days. They're just all around fun, okay? So get off my freaking back. Why do I sound like Jerry Seinfeld? I can't believe I transitioned to my star. I turned into Jerry Seinfeld. Except the only difference is I don't date 17-year-olds. Sorry. Anyway, at the end of every episode, we like posing a question. How could those reduces flow? And those, that means review juices. Mm-hmm. And so the question for the end of this week should be,
what Wisteria Lane Desperate Housewives themed gift are you getting me for Christmas this year, Ned?
I am getting you Edie's left nipple.
I'm going to cherish that until the day I fucking die. Guess what I'm going to get you?
What are you going to get me?
I'm going to get you Mike's sweaty tank top.
Oh, unwashed?
Unwashed.
Still wet?
Still wet. So when you leave us a review, let us know which Wisteria Lane Desperate Housewives themed gift you're getting us. Us specifically for Christmas.
Us, yeah, us. I want to know.
Yeah, what are you going to get us for Christmas?
I better see so many responses in Discord. I better see them. But other than that, if you want to find... if you want to I'm having a meltdown. Other than that, you can find me, Ned, on social media at Ned Jorts.
And you can find me, Mackenzie, at Mackenzie Wilkes.
Mackenzie.
Yes.
Ich liebe dich.
Okay.
Means I love you in German.
Oh, shit. Je t'aime. Means I love you in French.
Omelette du fromage.
Voulez-vous coucher avec moi ce soir?
Zum Frühstück, ich habe eine Trappe und eine Schweinekotelette. Menschen sagen, das ist nicht gesund, aber ich schmecke sehr gut. I love you, Mackenzie.
I love you, Ned.
Everyone else, stay juicy.
Stay juicy.